Hello, welcome to 2019 and the postmark.
Oh, I can't believe we didn't do that one.
I know. I thought the same thing. It's such a no-brainer.
Did someone suggest that, or did you actually?
No, I just looked it up.
You just looked it up.
Yeah,
okay.
And I thought, oh, I went through my list and was surprised we hadn't used it yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
So it's our opening episode for the new year. Usually January seems like it's quiet, but not quiet at all, especially in our Western democracies. The U.S., we're shut down right now.
Partial shutdown.
Day something, we're a month into it, a little bit more than a month. And thinking about an article that I read, that a couple different things. First of all, most federal employees don't live in D.C., so if we think it's just a coastal thing. And the other one was that, of course, so much of this doesn't touch a lot of people's lives. But I think it's going to start to do this as the IRS is going to take a much longer time processing tax returns.
Oh, yes.
And also starting to be felt at airports with
TSA
workers.
That's the big one, absolutely.
Yes,
I mean, it's a nightmare at airports already, right? So just throw in the fact that none of them are there because they're all furloughed because they're not being paid.
Yeah.
And you still have the same legal obligation to screen. Oh, this is going to start to bite.
Well, and I was thinking that if the TSA workers mobilized and decided to strike, and I know that all of the different possibilities or the different vulnerabilities around doing this, but if they striked for one day, I wonder if this would bring everyone to the table really fast, because it would everything would be shut down.
But let's think of the other ones out there that we don't talk about, right? The CDC.
Yes.
Right.
Yep.
So what happens if there's an outbreak of disease? Yeah. What if there's yet another E. coli outbreak and 13 billion pounds of ground beef that get used
FDA.
Everywhere? Right.
Yes. Yep.
We've got the national parks are now basically unsafe to go into.
Yep. The Coast Guard.
Coast Guard, right? That's a good one, right?
Yeah.
So there's all of this stuff, you know, that's very easy, and people have been saying it for years, going, the government doesn't do anything, whatever, right? And there's a really interesting contrast with Belgium here, believe it or not, in the financial crisis. Bear with me, right? So in the euro crisis, I think I mentioned this last time we were here, or maybe it was somewhere else, but anyway, next to Italy, the biggest pile of debt, public debt, is actually Belgium. And the weird thing is there was no Belgium crisis, right? It was a Greek crisis, right?
Yeah.
Italy, right? But nobody cares about Belgium.
Yeah.
And part of the reason for that was because during the acute phase of the crisis, they didn't have a government, by which I mean the elected representatives, not the bureaucrats, right? Didn't show up for work because there was split government. None of the politicians showed up, right? So things got done. Nobody did anything stupid and the markets didn't punish them. Now, we've managed to get the complete opposite of that. All the people who do useful stuff aren't allowed to go to work, and all the useless trumpets, muppets, and idiots that constitute our elected representatives, they're the ones who get to show up. Maybe we should be more Belgian.
That's interesting. So no one showed up. So there actually was no government.
There was no government. Well, there was no elected politicians.
Elected government, right.
But the government ran.
Right.
We've got elected politicians doing nothing, shutting down the government that does stuff.
Yes. And one of the things that I'm interested to see, I mean, it seems like this is a much longer term thing, but is there a slowdown in the economy due to the shutdown? And given all of the people who are laid off or furloughed or what have you, I think is interesting too. I like the Where's Mitch hashtag that's going on, just because the Senate has not been part of. We've heard a lot from Pelosi, a little bit from Chuck Schumer, but now the Senate's going to vote on something. But it is an interesting thing that the Senate and the House could actually, you know, decide to put the government back together without the president having any say in it. But
are you trying to suggest that the Senate is somehow beholden to presidential politics?
No, I would never suggest that.
That's
insane.
You know, we'll get onto Brexit in a moment because, you know, it's the gift that keeps on giving and it never goes away. But there is a kind of a weird similarity with what's going on with Brexit, with what's going on with the shutdown. And they're both reprehensible and avoidable forms of politicking, whereby one side wants the other side to own the disaster. That's really all that's going on.
Yes.
So rather than doing anything productive, it's like, no, I insist that you own this pile of crap.
Yes. And with this president, though, I think that the Democrats are going in this game of chicken are going to have to blink first, because they have to give the president some way to give something to him so he can claim victory. And
but
they must know this.
But they can't give him anything. To give him anything is to admit defeat and failure.
So in some way, they have to just take it on the chin. In the game of the big politicking, in order to get this thing moving.
And who suffers? You, me, and everybody else about 3 weeks from now in an airport.
Yeah, that's right.
So let's think about who could change this in 2020.
So there are 500. I don't know if you declared
this
week.
I think there's 11 people. Yeah.
Do you think I think you'd be a great candidate. You might as well declare.
Yeah, you never know. Well, actually, you do know. I have no chance.
You have a very powerful platform. 11 people, 4 women. It's a real range of people that are running. Senators. We have the first out gay mayor, Pete Buttigieg from South Bend, Indiana. I think he just declared today. I was thinking about this in terms of personalities, but also just thinking of the number of candidates that we have and how this happened in 2016 is when it was when Trump rose. And does the number, sheer number of candidates allow someone with a big personality to rise to the top? Because how else do you get any attention? How do you get out of the second tier debates except to have that big personality?
That's a really good point. I never thought of that. I mean, it could well be. I mean, to me, my story on the rise of Trump in the primaries was always the sheer exhaustion of the Republican base with the sort of corporate debt, the corporate Republican core.
Yeah.
Right. So my favorite one being they spent $100 million on Jeb! Exclamation mark, right? And it went nowhere, right? But I think you're right. I think there's something else going on here in terms of in such a crowded field of people that you don't know, essentially being the kind of the WWF wrestler at the Tea Party will probably get you far. So who's the WWF wrestler at this Democratic Tea Party then?
Well, that's who I was wondering about. Who's that person? And I don't think right now in the field of candidates or anyone, I think if Beto declares he might. I mean, they're still waiting.
We need another billionaire masquerading as a left populist.
That's exactly
totally
right,
what it is.
Right? Like a Mike Bloomberg sort of person. Although he doesn't have the charisma. I don't know. I mean, Joe Biden is the one that everyone's waiting on, but there's a lot of baggage that he has, not just politics-wise, but family-wise as well. I think he's kind of toxic right now. And it was interesting because I was reading a bunch of stuff that the new congresswoman from the Bronx, Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, like she's the kingmaker because she represents this progressive wing of the Democratic Party. She could potentially, you know, hold Biden back or something like that. And I guess when I was thinking about that and that sort of stream of progressivism combined with the, I don't know if you had 2 hours to watch the Covington Catholic video clip.
No,
over the last couple
I managed
days.
To avoid all of it.
I mean, that's a crazy situation. I mean, the clip that was that everybody saw and then the longer 2 hour video. And
they had a 2 hour video?
I mean, yes. And I think very few people understandably had time to watch it. But
what did they shoot for 2 hours? Did they have a film crew with them? How did
it was everyone's from their phones.
Oh, all sort of spliced together,
yes,
basically.
That's right. And it just showed the larger context.
So it's like, so basically it's Rashomon.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. It's Rashomon. Here's why I didn't even want to look at this, right? A bunch of people who are kids from a non-fashionable, non-elite part of the country wearing MAGA hats show up. They must be guilty.
Yeah.
Right? That's just by definition, right?
Instant
Second
indictment.
One, bunch of teenage boys behave badly on school trip. Oh my God, say it ain't so.
Yeah.
It's really sad that regardless of what the specifics of this are, we've just become so polarized that we just look at a white kid in a MAGA hat and just go, that's it. You're just a bad person. I don't care. You're a bad person. That's it.
And the left doesn't have the ability right now to either say that, white kid in MAGA hat, bad person, which, okay, or to say, I didn't see the whole video and now I've changed. It's just instant indictment.
But also this whole thing of like, why do you need to see the whole video? Who are you?
Yeah.
I mean, it's this whole social media thing about everybody has a right to have an opinion.
Yeah.
Yes, but you don't have an opinion, a right to have it heard or to be taken seriously. I mean, what is this? This is what we care about?
Yeah.
I'm truly astonished by it.
I mean, I sound like such an old fogey to say that social media, but it really is like, you're right, that everyone gets to have an opinion. Suddenly everybody follows one story that, you're right, high school kids on a trip?
On a school trip, behave badly. Yeah. America loses its collective mind. Yeah. I mean, it's just astonishing.
Yeah.
But anyway, we were talking about presidential candidates.
Yes, and policy too.
Well, let's not do policy. Yeah. But what do you think about Elizabeth Warren? Do you think she stands a hope in hell? Because basically, I look at her and think that's a more cutting edge, powerful version of a technocrat centrist like Clinton.
Yeah.
And she's a woman. Mm-hmm. She's already toxic to many constituents, particularly Trump voters. And she's a Harvard professor.
I mean,
in the current sort of we hate elites moment, I think that's a bit of a long pitch.
Yes. I mean, I take it back a little bit further to say that senators from Massachusetts don't have a good track record
of running
and winning for president. But it's interesting. I hadn't thought about the toxicity may actually work for her, that she has so many whammies against her, that she's a woman, that she's liberal, that she's a fancy Harvard professor, that maybe, I mean, it already makes her so polarized that it actually maybe brings people together.
Or it gives her that profile in that crowded field that you were talking about. Because the one thing is she knows what she's talking about.
And she has one singular message. I don't know that anybody else has a message, but her message of, like, you've been forgotten, the system's rigged, it works. I mean,
because that was Trump's message.
Yeah. It works. Ooh. On this point, though, lots of talk, and it's funny to see marginal tax rate in the news, because it's not something that we
generally see in polls. Welcome to Econ 102. Yes. Today we're going to talk about taxes. Now, everybody hates paying taxes. The number of explainers. But I mean, it's kind of shocking that you actually have to explain to people what a marginal tax rate is in the first place.
Well, it's something that, you know, I don't know, that's dinner table talk.
Just in case anybody's missed it, like, if you've been under a rock forever, right, you get a standard allowance, or at least you used to. Then you get some exemptions if you've got kids. Then they tax the next chunk of your income at a certain rate. And then if you go above that, that gets a slightly higher rate. And if you go above that, it gets a slightly higher rate. It used to be way more steep than it was now. If you go back to the time when Eisenhower, Republican, was president, the top marginal rate of taxation was, if I get this right, either 89.5% or 91%. Now, what was that all about? It was because we used to raise taxes to pay for things, namely the buildup of the Cold War and the Vietnam War. And then since the Reagan era, we've been cutting. And at the same time, you end up with 22 states in the union where the schools meet 4 days a week because they don't have enough money to open them, where school fees have gone through the roof such that basically you have $1.5 trillion in student loan debt because we always love a tax cut, right? Well, here's the thing about the what's proposed on these tax cuts. When you're talking about people paying a 70% tax on ultra-high incomes, you're talking about 13,000 people or thereabouts out of a population of 330 million and a tax-paying population of 170 million. Guess what? They made off with all the gains and rigged the system to make sure they pay no taxes. Hedge fund managers have a carried interest reduction. Mm-hmm. They pay 50 nominal 9 real.
Wow.
Right? It's ridiculous. This whole system is completely junked. Of course it should be paid like that. And the interesting thing is the opinion polls show that a vast majority of Democrats agree with this woman, right?
Yeah.
But also there's a significant minority of Republicans that also think this tax is a good idea.
13,000 people. That's not even... I grew up in a tiny town. That's like approximately the size of my tiny town.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's so interesting that it doesn't resonate with Joe Schmo or Joanne Schmo.
Again, people don't think of the margin. They think about the total thing. Oh my God, if I was to pay 60, 70% tax, I'd have nothing. It's like, you're never going to get near the threshold where you would pay this. Right? Oxfam today, every year at Davos, when Davos comes out, Davos is when all the rich people go to Switzerland and talk to each other about what they're not going to do about inequality and climate change. Oxfam came out today, 22 billionaires. Own as much as the entire bottom half of the world's population of 7.6 billion. So you can put in a minibus half the world's wealth. Tell me they're paying their fair share. Tell me they earned that.
Maybe I just need to work harder.
Well,
I need to work harder
to
and
work
I can
hard,
get that.
And then you could, that's
And I pull
a good
myself
one.
Up by my bootstraps and I become suddenly Mark Zuckerberg or Bill Gates.
Who both went to Harvard and were able to borrow almost unlimited money from parents and relatives.
That's the fallacy.
But, totally. But anyway, here's another one that goes with this. And this is the one that really gets me. So corporations in the United States have the protection of persons.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you get the protection of persons, you have the rights of persons, you have the duties of persons, you should pay your taxes. So while you've been cutting the top marginal rates on income tax, guess what we've been doing with corporate tax?
Increasing it?
No. Here's some figures, right? Let's start this way. The high point was 52.8% in 1968 to fund Vietnam and the Great Society. They were also, incidentally, the peak years of equality and labor share of income in the United States, because guess what? Corps were actually paying taxes. Since then, we've been cutting them. Nixon cut them at 48, Carter at 46, Reagan at 34, Trump now got them at 21. Meanwhile, labor's share of national income has fallen and wage growth has been stagnant.
Yeah.
So guess what? We're on permanent budget deficits, which the super elite turn around and tell us it's our fault for spending too much.
So just to summarize, when corporate tax rate was high, there was more equality.
Oh, yeah. Guess what? Because somebody was paying the taxes.
Yeah.
Which doesn't happen anymore.
And it was, I mean...
In 2010, I paid more taxes than GE.
Yeah.
That's really true. I paid more taxes mm-hmm. than GE mm-hmm. in 2010. In 2015, Apple paid equivalent amount of tax to, I think, the four of us put together.
But you said 21% Trump has now cut it to.
Yeah, that's the nominal rate. And then you basically put transfer pricing issues through subsidiaries. You do what's called an Irish, the double Dutch sandwich with the Irish twist.
Oh, right.
Whereby
yes,
you bank
yes.
all your profits to an Irish subsidiary right, and then right. you go through Holland and you end up with a less than 0.1% tax rate.
So Apple's
it's
bringing
a total
in
scam.
$1 billion and paying virtually no tax
exactly.
on that.
Exactly.
And then,
and we love them because they're yes. the innovators.
Yes.
I mean, honestly, like, this is the thing. There's a reason the Davos elite are scared, because we've kind of called them on their bullshit.
Mm-hmm.
And whether it's the reaction of the right and populism, whether it's the reaction of the left like Cortez,
mm-hmm.
we'll just know what you've been doing mm-hmm. and you need to stop.
Well, I mean, I'm sure that you're talked out about this, but I mean, the big elephant with a British flag on it is, of course, Brexit. I mean, I just was thinking, Theresa May, man, you just got voted down, not you, but your proposal just got voted down, and you still have a job because no one wants your job because it's so terrible.
Exactly.
It's
exactly.
like the worst job
there
on the planet.
There is no actual majority in the House of Commons for any proposal. So therefore, they vote her down with a no confidence. Mm-hmm. They vote her down and say, we're not going to do this overwhelmingly. And then the thought of actually having an election that Labour could win.
Yeah.
is so terrifying that the people who voted against you now back you up, but they're not backing you up to sign a deal because they hate your deal.
Yes.
This is, I think there's a Greek play about this, and at the end,
seriously.
Everybody dies on a boat or something like that.
Yeah.
It's just like, what?
I mean, it's just the political twists and turns, but they're not supporting her. They don't support. But what I guess my question is, what do they support? Where is the majority?
There isn't.
But
one. There isn't one. I mean, so as political scientists, we
yes,
put
please.
On our little political science hat for a moment and talk about the Arrow's paradox of cycling in majorities.
Yeah.
That you can prefer strawberry to vanilla to chocolate in terms of ice cream, but logically then you cannot prefer chocolate to strawberry,
mm-hmm.
right? You can't go round and round and round. You never make a decision. The British Parliament has managed to perfect this.
Mm-hmm.
Anybody who prefers strawberry to chocolate will actually vote for vanilla to stop chocolate because they can't get strawberry.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Will they take advantage of this of the extension? And just kick the can down the road.
Well, they got nothing else. And the EU has an interest in giving them an extension, because if they basically talk down the clock, then it's the everybody loses scenario. So they can give them more time to not actually figure out what they're doing, because there is no solution. Even if you got rid of the majority problem, you've still got this problem.
Yeah.
The British border in Ireland.
Yes, right.
Right. You cannot have one bit of a contiguous landmass in a free trade zone with everybody else
mm-hmm.
and another one saying, I'm not there.
Mm-hmm.
The so-called backstop was literally, we're just going to pretend it's not true. And correctly, they were called on that. But what's your alternative?
Right. And the brinksmanship is that she tries to go back to Brussels now, but has Brussels, it seems like, has given the deal that they're going to give.
Yeah, they're given the deal they're going to give. And not only that, Brussels are like, there is no good end to this. We know this. We can at least admit there's no good end to this. I mean, think about all the things that have gone on in the past 2 years, right?
Yeah.
The rise of populism.
Mm-hmm.
Australia last week went through the 5 hottest days on record.
Mm-hmm.
Massive climate change effects becoming incredibly apparent everywhere. Mm-hmm. I mean, all that sort of stuff that we could actually do something about, you know, inequality, wealth, wage growth, all that. No, let's just spend 2 years in paralysis doing this nonsense.
Yes. I mean, I think that's what you were at the top of the show talking about, the parallels between the US and the UK and the paralysis of it.
Right.
Like,
the
our
game
Western
is simply
democracy,
get the
yes.
other person screwed over.
Yeah.
There's no progress. There's no result.
And even the thought of a second referendum, which seems like that's going nowhere. I mean, if the do-over and it's the same outcome, then we just keep doing it?
And even if it's not, though, like, so let's say you went 52-48 last time. What happens if you get 52-48 the other way this time? Why is that any better than the last one?
Yes, that's right. Yeah.
Right? I mean, the referendum was not a solution the first time. Doing it again isn't going to make it any better.
Right. I mean, it's the point about insanity, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's so much else to say.
There's so much else to say. About, Happy New Year, everyone.
Yes.
It's all so awesome.
What about Venezuela? Happy New Year to the Venezuelans. It's such a beautiful country.
All right. So
total turmoil.
Here's one of my predictions for 2019. Are you ready? there will be military intervention into Venezuela. And it's coming soon.
Yeah.
Now, here's the really crazy part about this, whether you think it's a good idea or not, is how it happens.
Mm-hmm.
So about, I believe, 3 million Venezuelans have left, basically up sticks and gone. The economy simply hasn't worked for several years. The basic problem behind this is ludicrously bad governance and a singular failure to invest in the only thing they had, which was oil,
mm-hmm.
so that their production capacity collapsed at the same time as the price collapsed.
Mm-hmm.
So imports got ludicrously expensive, so inflation went through the roof, etc. Right? In any sort of stable democracy, the rascals would have been thrown out and somebody would have tried to engineer a change. The problem is the society has historically been so polarized that basically once you're in, you do everything to stay in and screw the other guy over. Now, with people hemorrhaging left, right, and center physically out of the country, Colombia did something very interesting last year. I bet you don't know this.
I don't.
It joined NATO.
Colombia?
Yeah. Colombia is now an associate member of NATO.
The North Atlantic Treaty.
Which means that it is, the North Atlantic Treaty. Right?
Yeah.
Which means that an attack on one is an attack on all.
Yeah.
Can you see where this is leading?
Oh, geez, Louise, yes.
Right, yeah. Exactly. And let's think about, you know, what has Trump got in terms of foreign policy just now? Another meeting with the North Korean Twinkie boy that nobody cares about.
Yep.
And the wall, which he's not going to get. His domestic agenda has evaporated to the extent he ever had one. So what about a good war of distraction?
Oh, man, it's like the wag the dog, right?
Woof, woof.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
No, there's a buddy of mine here in Providence, right?
That's quite the
prediction. A friend of mine in Providence who's from Venezuela, right?
Yeah.
And he hates the incumbent government.
Yeah.
And he can tell you horror stories from now to Sunday. So,
yeah.
You know, this isn't a sort of like, you know, they're all right-wingers, they're all left-wingers. I mean, the basic economic mechanism of the country have failed to function. There's a serious problem there. All I'm simply saying is that, and we're going to compound that with a military solution,
which, of course,
has worked out so well over the past several years, those military interventions.
Well, especially in Central and South America, too.
Oh, they're brilliant. Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, Afghanistan's been a shining success.
Yeah, yes. Shining example. As we wrap things up, so Jeff Bezos is getting a divorce. And the reason why this is even rating is, of course, it's going to be the most expensive divorce. And I think his wife will become the fourth richest person in the world as a result.
Wow.
Something like that.
That's like cashing in the best insurance policy ever.
It's great, right?
Wow.
But if you were grocery shopping, you might have saw the front page of the National Enquirer, which broke the text that he sent his mistress. And I was thinking, wow, they're going to be
juicy. Sorry, did you just cite National Enquirer as an authority?
I did. Yeah, they broke into his account and got his text messages that were not at all. It was like a teenage boy who texted things like, "I want to
I just want to get back into this. Isn't it illegal to break into somebody's phone and steal their text messages?
Probably not, because I think he probably signed his life when he checked the box to accept. I don't know. I've never read the. I've never read
terms and agreements may apply.
Yes, exactly.
Terms and conditions may apply. That's all right.
Anyway,
carry on. So basically,
to the content of the
salacious?
Juicy. Yes, I want to read the newspaper with you. I want to have coffee with you.
Aww.
I want to hold your hand. So you just think that someone worth $11 trillion will write super salacious texts. But in fact, they were very pedestrian to an age-appropriate woman. So
why is that even on grounds for divorce? I mean, I could send you a text that says, "I'd like to have coffee with you.
Yes.
I'd like to read the newspaper with you. That doesn't necessarily mean I have to get divorced.
No, I know. Maybe his wife was just like tired of...
Maybe she was just going, "I'm sitting on the largest free option in finance
ever.
And I'm about to cash it in.
And my settlement can fix inequality."
It literally could.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Are you excited for the Super Bowl?
The what?
The Super Bowl.
Oh, right. That's that sort of like bizarre American football thing where men in spandex get out in like minus 200 and then there's a pop star at halftime.
Yeah. Yes, that's it. That's it. Good. Yeah. Very good.
I've never really sort of gotten into it, I must admit.
Well, I mean, and you've lived in New England. I mean, Tom Brady is going for his 9th Super Bowl ring. He's like 1,000 years old in football terms. I mean, this is...
You know how out of this I am? So this is a little true story. There's another one of these teams that its colors are orange and they beat the Patriots a few years ago. Does anyone remember who that is? Is it Kansas City or something like this?
Orange.
Is it the Broncos? It might be the Broncos, right?
Yeah.
So the day after they lost, I had to get, I was filling up my car, which at that time was a diesel for my sons. And I went to the diesel pump and I couldn't find my gloves because diesel pumps stink. You don't want to handle them, right? So I went into the gas station store and I went, cheap glove. And I looked around and I had these orange gloves, which of course are like Broncos gloves. Don't know why they were there. So I put them on and then walked out and started doing this. And you should have seen the looks I was getting from the people who were coming up to Philip. I mean, they were like going to kill me. And I had no idea. I think I survived because I had no idea why they were so angry.
Right.
I was just like, why are these people looking at me like that? It's kind of weird. It's because I was wearing Broncos gloves.
And it was that look of like, I have no idea what's happening.
And I think what saved me is like, I clearly had no clue right. what was going on. So when does this happen?
It happens in 2 weeks. And it'll be the talk of the town. You'll get Pats fever, I'm sure, because tons of Pats fans here in Providence. Mark is
I've managed to avoid it so far. That's it. Anything else going on that we can look forward to?
I mean, I think so, but I'm going to save it for our next episode because it feels like the world is moving at like a so fast these days. Well, as it always does, I guess.
I guess it always does. And then luckily, we're here to comment on it in a slightly snarky, but nonetheless educative and somewhat realistic way.
I like that.
That is good.
Thank you all. We'll see you next time.
Bye.